Vicky Rose grew up knowing something was missing in her life. In her early 20s, she came up with a plan to fill that sense of emptiness.
I thought if I got married, that the hurts from childhood, the emptiness that I had, that I was feeling, that would all just go away, that everything would be okay. And so I was really focused on getting married.
So when she got engaged, she was desperate to follow through with the wedding, even though she told a friend,
I'm just not sure this is really going to work, but I just want to get married. And if it doesn't work, we'll just get a divorce.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast for Monday, October 13th, 2014. This past weekend, several thousand women came together for True Woman 14 in Indianapolis, Indiana. The Lord did exciting things at that conference, and you'll hear a full report here on Revive Our Hearts later this week. At True Woman, women in the audience were moved by a video our team debuted. It was a 10-minute documentary telling the story of Vicky Rose. It looked like Vicky had everything, a successful job, nice clothes, access to New York City's social elites. But inside, she knew she was empty. I hope you'll see that video at reviveourhearts.com. And this week, Nancy will take us deeper into that moving story. Nancy Lee DeMoss is here to get us started.
Well, one of our guests today, Vicky Rose, is no stranger to Revive Our Hearts. We've had the privilege of having her on the broadcast a number of times in the past, and you've listened to her testimony, her story of how God took a hopelessly derailed marriage and did an amazing restoration work that only God can do. And I know that many marriages have been impacted by hearing that story. But today we get to have not just Vicky in the studio, but her husband, Bill Rose. And Bill and Vicky, thank you so much for stopping by en route to a speaking engagement where you're going to be sharing your testimony, for stopping by our home base in Southwest Michigan to be with us in the studio today. Welcome to Revive Our Hearts.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to be here and see you in your home offices and to see Revive Our Hearts. It's great.
Yeah, we've been friends for a long time. And in fact, our lives, as you'll hear on today's broadcast, intertwine in some ways that go back decades or more. And we'll tell more about that. But, you know, we were sitting at dinner last night and laughing together with another couple about the differences between husbands and wives and how so often it seems like opposites attract. I don't know why that is. I'm single, but it seems true of many married couples. And you all were talking about some of just the differences between you. And I started wondering, what did you have in common? You were saying that morning starts for you at about what time?
At 11 o'clock.
So you're a late night guy.
I am.
And Vicky, how are you wired?
I love to be up early. The earlier, the better. I like to be up when it's still dark, even have time with the Lord, when nobody else is moving in the house.
Once in a while, she does me a favor and stays up to like 11:30 and watches TV with me and watches baseball tonight or something. I keep showing her these highlights over and over again.
So you're into baseball. You just let that out of the bag and have a big sports background. And Vicky, was your background big in sports?
I had never been to a baseball game when I first met Billy. In 1975 we met, and I had not been to one baseball game. That first summer that we dated, I went to 70 Yankee home games.
Now, why the Yankees?
I've been a limited partner in the Yankees since 1976. Clearly, there's a—
You have an allegiance there.
There's an allegiance and all sorts of stuff towards the Yankees.
And so, Vicky, you got baptized by immersion into the baseball world.
Oh, I did. But I went willingly, really.
She went because she wanted to get married.
That's true.
It worked.
It worked. It is true, and it worked.
But you were so different, and you are so different. What are some of the other differences you found in your now 35 years of marriage?
Well, I love to see, go to theater, do cultural things.
I think watching ESPN and baseball tonight and going to games is totally cultural.
And I love, Nancy, I love the house quiet when I'm home alone. No TV, maybe praise music playing, classical music, but definitely quiet. I like quiet.
Okay, you and I could do well together.
Yes.
That's great. Well, we just bought a new apartment in New York and totally renovated the place. And it's not that big, but there's 9 TVs in this 3-bedroom apartment. There's 2 in bathrooms, actually. A pitch, a putt, a pass, or a punt is not missed in my house.
So there's, it's not all quiet then.
No.
In fact, when Billy's, when he's away, I don't even know how to work half the TV stuff. But I also, I really like to plan in advance. I like to know what is coming down the road, look at our calendar, make plans.
If there are some guys listening to this, I got to tell you, you know that the best plans, the best opportunities, the best invites are coming at the last minute. So why would you want to make a plan in advance when you have to break it anyway? It makes no sense at all.
So you're not so much into the order structure thing.
No, actually, which is one great reason why I'm married to Vicky, because she does put a little order into my life as much as I resist it.
And does he bring a little spontaneity to your life?
Definitely. When we were first dating, I had cooked an entire dinner, and we got a phone call to go out to dinner, and I said, okay, and I took everything out of the oven, stuck it on top of the stove, and out we went. And I did that one time, then, back in 1975 or 6, and Billy still reminds me to this day when he wants to do something spontaneous. He said, I married you. Look what you did then.
Hasn't happened since.
Well, you were dating then.
Exactly. Thank you.
There's no excuse.
Best impressions.
There's no excuse for that.
Okay, now, Vicky, I know that you're like other women, that often at the end of the day you want to sit and kind of talk about your day. Are you that kind of woman?
Yes. Yeah, it's very important to me. I need to talk to Billy, tell him what's gone on in the day, to process. It also, it makes me feel close that I can share what I've done or what we've done or you know, how it affected me, want to know how it's affected him, how does he feel about it.
So kind of the rehash of the day.
Yes.
And how's it affect you guys,
Well,
Bill?
First of all, sweetheart, I always feel close to you. And but I see no reason to talk about the stuff that we just lived through. And that makes no sense at all.
Okay, every guy listening to this right now.
Let's just move on. I mean, we've lived through the day. We've gone through it. Why do we need to discuss it?
So you came into marriage with some big differences. Just the fact, you know, marriage as a man and a woman is already, you got huge differences there. And then you two had even more differences maybe than most. But not only that, you had a lot of baggage that you brought
Yes.
with you into marriage. When you got married more than 35 years ago, neither of you knew the Lord, both from a Jewish background. And I want to just unfold a bit about where you both came from and how the Lord, your journey, not only in your marriage, but also in your walk with the Lord. And Vicky, I've known you better than Bill for a lot of years, and I've heard you talk about how you were trying to fill empty places in your life, even starting probably as a teenager. What did that look like for you?
Well, I grew up in New York City, and both my parents, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. She had some major rage issues. My dad worked all the time and loved what he did. And I think even starting when I was very young, I felt like I was a burden to them. And so I was always trying to fit in, trying to not, as my mother said, don't rock the boat. And so that was part of it. As I went off into high school, my mom became sick and died my 1 week before high school graduation. And so there was an emptiness there. And Dad had said when she died, you know, we're just going to go on with life as it is. Don't cry at her funeral. He said, don't cry. We're going to show everyone how strong we are. Mm. And so I had learned to bury. Growing up, I had learned to bury my feelings, really. And I couldn't even tell you that I'm sad. I mean, yes, I was sad when my mom died, but I didn't know how to identify what I was feeling and be okay with that, because it wasn't okay in my family to be sad, to cry, to be down. It just wasn't. So I learned to just keep going. And then that starts to build an emptiness. It definitely does. And so when I went to college without, you know, no mom, I felt a little lost, and there definitely was a growing emptiness. In New York City, you know, have more, do more, buy more is kind of the modus operandi there. I'm sure it's not just New York, but I started, you know, if I shop, if I have nice clothes, if I have enough shoes in the closet and I look great or, you know, look in fashion, I even went into the fashion business, all of that, trying to bury an emptiness that was growing.
And Bill, your background, also Jewish. Were you all practicing Jews, religious Jews? What did that look like for you?
No, the only time that I can really remember going to temple was back then the World Series used to take place in September during the High Holy Days. And my dad wanted to take me to a World Series game. The Yankees were playing, I believe it was the Cardinals, actually. And so he had to take me out of school to do it. My mother said, the only way you can do that is if you take him to Temple in the morning, and then you can go. So we went to Temple in the morning, went to the ball game in the afternoon, and that's really my only recollection of going to Temple. You know, I knew I was Jewish. And to me, it was more of a cultural thing mm-hmm. and a heritage than it was a religion. The school I went to a school in New York City called Trinity. It was a private school. We had chapel every morning, and there were plenty of Jewish kids at Trinity, maybe more than not. That was really my upbringing.
So what were the driving motivations in your life as you look at your young adult years? What were you after? What were you pursuing? What mattered to you?
I wanted to be a professional baseball player. I got pretty good. My hero growing up was a guy named Bobby Richardson, who was second baseman on the Yankees.
Right.
And I really wanted to play second base for the Yankees. And I taught myself how to switch hit between my sophomore and junior years in high school. Went to a prep school in Connecticut. Was recruited heavily. I was captain my senior year. Was recruited heavily by a major baseball school on the West Coast, and we went out there to play their varsity team out there, and our team had five hits. I had four of them, two left-handed, two right-handed, and was off. I got given a different date every night out there. Guy brought a car up. I said, I don't have a license. He said, don't worry about it. Here's your license. And so that was what recruiting was like back in the 70s, and then I tore everything in my knee. And halfway through my senior year, so my baseball career was kind of shot.
So what was next for you?
After that, I graduated from high school. I went to college, not the one that recruited me, because they had no more interest in me after my knee was done. And then went to work for my dad, who was in the textile business after college. And certainly wasn't what I wanted to do, but the trips to Europe to buy the fabrics were nice.
So I know both of you ended up in a partying lifestyle. When did that start? For you, Bill?
Started for me really in college. My sophomore year, myself and two of my really good friends, we moved into a condominium complex. Matter of fact, we were the only college kids in this whole condominium complex. We ended up having the best parties on campus about 3 days a week. There was, pot, there was hash, there were Quaaludes, but it was really pretty much at the time under control. I actually went to class most of the time. More than my other two roommates did, I promise you that. So anyway, we graduated from college and started to work for my dad. And I was still dabbling with some drugs. And every time a major issue hit, I would start doing some coke.
A major issue as in this was a way of escape?
I don't know. It was a way to build up my confidence and just make me a little tougher and get me through stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was still really upset about the whole knee issue and not being able to do what I wanted to do
with baseball.
And that took a really long time to get over, because that was a crushing blow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that really was my life dream. And so, I dated a ton in college, and then I met Vicky in 1975.
Okay, how did you meet?
Vicky's parents had moved into my parents' building.
Dad had remarried
after my mom died,
and we had moved into an apartment building that Bill had grown up in with his family. And I was still in college when we moved into the building.
So who saw whom first?
I saw her walk out of the building. I was with a friend of mine who had gone to Boston University. He said, I think her name is Vicky Gage. I recognized the last name. Because we knew my mom knew this other person, Sue Gage. And so I said to my mom, find out if they're related. And it turned out they were. She was her niece. But Sue said, she's going out with some, hippie guy from the village. Don't even bother.
Thanks, so, honey.
It was true. Bruce, I hope you're not listening.
So you didn't meet at that point.
So I hadn't even seen him. No, I received a phone call from my Aunt Sue saying there was a nice young fellow in my new building that was interested in taking me out. And I said, well, thank you very much, but I'm seeing someone right now. And then a year later, after I had graduated from college, I broke up with this nice with this boyfriend, and
it wasn't nice.
And I called Aunt Sue and I said, "If that guy from my building is still interested, I'm available."
And Aunt Sue called.
Called my mom and she told me. So I called Vicky and invited her out for a date. So she accepted. And then about, I don't know, an hour later, the phone rings. She calls back and tells me she forgot that she was having her foot operated on. And I thought to myself, that is the most lame excuse that I've ever heard in my whole life. I mean, who forgets they're having their foot operated on?
Well, it was a toe surgery, and I did completely forget because I was so excited that you had called to ask me out.
That I understand. So
the date got postponed?
Well, and I still wasn't sure, so I gave the doorman like $10 each to make sure when she came back she actually like was on crutches because I wanted to know the truth. and fortunately for her, she was. And then actually when she was recuperating, I would call and ask how she was and all that. And
it turned out to be more of a surgery than I thought it would. And I was in a lot of discomfort and pain. And Billy called all week long to see how I missed a week of work. And he called frequently. And that was really huge for me because I was at a place in my life. I had just graduated from college. My dad had remarried. My stepmother had three children. And I really felt like I didn't belong any place anymore. My family wasn't my family as I had known it. And I really had no place that felt like home. And so when Billy started calling to see how I felt, this was just something that was meeting a deep need that I had.
What was your first date?
Billy took me to a beautiful restaurant and dancing club in New York called Le Club.
Right.
And so we sat at had music. It was a beautiful place.
So it wasn't a baseball game?
No. The second date, we went to a hockey game. And then he took me to another famous restaurant in New York called the 21 Club. And after the hockey game, I had never been to a hockey game either.
Great seats, though.
Great seats at the hockey game, great seats at the restaurant. And I'll never live this down, but I looked at the menu. It was late at night. And I had always been taught by my parents, you order the least expensive thing on a menu when you go out to dinner with other people.
She obviously didn't pay attention.
And I think I ordered the most expensive thing on the menu that night. But that was our second date. And then I think the next day I received a dozen long-stem red roses. I don't know if I consciously thought this, but I thought if I got married that the hurts from childhood, the emptiness that I had, that I was feeling, that would all just go away, that everything would be okay. And so I was really focused on getting married.
And during that, was it a year or so till you got married?
It was a year and a quarter from the time we met in November of 1975 till we were married in February of 1977.
I proposed to her right before a baseball game.
Oh, tell us.
I don't really remember.
Which is true.
but I know it was before a baseball game.
It was before a Red Sox game.
Did I have a Cracker Jack box out or something?
No. It was just a very basic, will you marry me, and with a ring.
And then we went to a ball game to celebrate.
So nothing big and romantic.
Well, not in my not from my perspective.
Depends who you're asking, right?
Right.
I thought it was huge.
So during that year and a quarter before you got married, were there any – because as the story is going to unfold, there were a lot of – your marriage has been – in those early years was very rocky. Was there anything in that dating period that should have been a clue that, you know, this is not going to be an easy road or relationship? Or was everything just smooth during that year?
I thought it was fairly smooth during that year. I mean, anybody that could cook a whole dinner and then just blow it off because Steinbrenner calls.
Because she's so spontaneous.
And wants to go to dinner. I thought she was spontaneous. I mean, man, was I fooled.
And for me, at that point in my life, I loved to go ice skating. On the weekends, I loved to go do things, go walk, window shop, go shopping. And Billy loved to watch sports all weekend, and that was a big issue for me. But I, at that point, was just willing to give up anything that was important to me because, well, first of all, I was falling in love with Billy, and second of all, I wanted the relationship to work. And I started a behavior then that I think I had learned growing up, which is if I don't have to do it, it's not important. I'll do whatever it takes to make you happy. It doesn't matter if I'm getting to do what I want. So it's known as codependence.
So that pattern, as you look back, you can see that.
I can definitely see that, and I can definitely see that that was not a healthy pattern for me or for our marriage, because Billy didn't really know that that was necessarily going on. And
occasionally after we got married, she would like explode and was like telling me, you know, I give and give and give, and I can't give anymore. And I'll be going, what are you talking about?
Because you had no clue.
I had no clue.
And I was afraid to communicate my feelings because I had grown up in a home where you just didn't.
So it wasn't really an honest relationship.
Correct. That's very true.
So you get married, and when is the first clue to either one of you that this isn't all that you had hoped or thought it might be? Who realized that first?
I don't know. I'm on the airplane. We're right after we got married, and During the we had the wedding at your parents' apartment,
mm-hmm.
and my two roommates were college.
Wait a minute, you had to ask her.
Well, I wasn't sure
where the wedding was.
Thank you, Nancy, for noticing that.
It was over 35 years ago, Nancy.
You've slept since then, right?
I was doing a lot of drugs back there, so it's I got an excuse.
And I really wasn't aware that much that there were drugs going on. I mean,
I don't think you really cared, though.
It was the 70s, so I had seen drugs in my dorm in college. I hadn't really done drugs myself.
I mean, I was friendly with the people from Studio 54 and from Xenon, and we would go to their private rooms, and there were so many famous – I'm not going to name them, but there were so many famous actors and athletes that we were up there with, you know, doing lines of coke with. It was common.
This was after we were married.
Right.
Yeah.
But pretty close right after. It was back in the late 70s. It was the thing to do. And it was, you know, quote unquote, cool.
And you were doing it together?
Yes, we were.
So disappointment, let's go back to that. And for you, Vicky, didn't that even begin a bit on your honeymoon?
Well, wait, before you even go there. So we get married. And we have a plane that night after the ceremony to go to fly to L.A. and then spend the night in L.A. and then drive to Palm Springs. And we're on the plane going to L.A. and Vicky's asleep, taking a little snooze. And I sort of looked over at her and I thought to myself, what the heck did I just do? And, you know, I mean, I was 24 and I'm thinking, I can't believe I just got married. And, you know, it was like, well.
You're probably not the first person to ever have that thought.
No, and it was also like, well, if it doesn't work, you know, I'll get a divorce. Not a big deal.
So that was in your mind already?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I think Vicky will now share that pretty much the same thing.
Before, we were engaged, I think it was in August before we were married, and we went for 2 weeks with Billy's parents to Italy. Right after we were engaged, and
I was a good date.
I borrowed luggage from a friend of mine, one of my closest friends. And I remember saying, you know, I'm just not sure this is really going to work, but I just want to get married. And if it doesn't work, we'll just get a divorce.
Was divorce a part of the culture?
Neither of our parents had. I mean, my father was married to my mother for 32 years when she died. My father was married to my stepmother for 20 years. And Billy's parents were married for
40.
For 40. There was no divorce in our family, but it was very cultural and very of our generation.
I walked into my mom's room the morning of my wedding. I said, I can't do this. And she kind of talked me off the ledge.
What a way to start a marriage. Bill and Vicky Rose have been talking with Nancy Lee DeMoss about the weeks leading up to their wedding. They were both empty. They both were searching for meaning apart from Jesus, and they were about to start living life together. As the story unfolds this week, you'll hear about addictions to cocaine and to shopping. You'll hear about a marriage that seemed impossible to heal. And you'll hear about God's power to change lives and relationships. Keep listening all this week. Vicki Rose has written about this story in a book called Every Reason to Leave and Why We Chose to Stay Together. If you know a woman struggling in an unhappy marriage, I hope you'll get her a copy. She'll be encouraged by Vicki's story, and she'll hear the truth of God's Word. She'll read about the ultimate reasons to stay committed, just like Christ is committed to the church. And in this book, you'll find out how Vicki's emptiness was truly filled in Christ. We'll send you the book, Every Reason to Leave, when you support Revive Our Hearts with a gift of any amount. We're able to bring you programs like this one thanks to listeners who believe in the ministry and give to make it possible. Vicki Rose believes in what God's doing at Revive Our Hearts and knows the blessing that comes from joining in God's work.
I would love to encourage you, if you have never given to Revive Our Hearts, that in giving, there's a joy of partnering with a ministry that reaches so many women worldwide, not just in the United States. In Russia, I have was there last year for a conference, and women there are listening to Revive Our Hearts, and in the Dominican Republic, and all across the United States. And I would just encourage you to be a partner, because when you partner with Revive Our Hearts, you're partnering with God's Word going forth into all the world, part of the Great Commission.
When you donate any amount to Revive Our Hearts, just ask for Vicki's book, Every Reason to Leave. Our number is 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. Or visit reviveourhearts.com. I know Vicki's story will bring up a lot of questions and comments from women who have their own challenges in marriage. You can post your comment or question on the Revive Our Hearts listener blog. Visit reviveourhearts.com and click on today's program. Scroll to the end of the transcript and leave your question. Vicki Rose will be joining us on the listener blog today, so she may get to your question and post an answer. Again, that's at reviveourhearts.com. Well, tomorrow we'll pick back up on Bill and Vicki's story. We'll hear how Bill started a restaurant. It was filled with rich and famous people every night and seemed like a big success. But this made Vicki's problem seem even worse. Find out why when we're back tomorrow for Revive Our Hearts. Make sure to check out the documentary film our team made with Bill and Vicki, shot on location in New York City. You'll find it at reviveourhearts.com. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy Lee DeMoss is an outreach of Life Action Ministries.